Welcome to Fresh Research, a podcast from the nonprofit Times. We explore some of the most interesting and sometimes provocative findings focused on the world of nonprofits. Thanks for tuning in. Here at the nonprofit Times, we see tons of great fresh research. So in each episode, we take a recent study or survey and have a conversation with the authors about what they found and why they think it's important for charities. We'll also give away some books and give you access to other valuable information from the nonprofit Times.
The American Cancer Society aims to raise $1 million exclusively through cryptocurrency. Its Cancer Crypto Fund will be renamed in honor of the first donor to contribute $250,000. The Salvation Army launched a cryptocurrency option the week before Christmas and received 13 donations, including one donor who gave 2 bitcoins. And it's not just big national charities that are getting in on the action of cryptocurrency. Miami Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired and the Brotherhood Sister Soul in Harlem both recently announced they now accept cryptocurrency donations. Hi, I'm Mark Rivna for the Nonprofit Times. In this episode, I talk with Jason Shim and Ann Connolly about their new book, Bitcoin and the Future of Fundraising, A Beginner's Guide to Cryptocurrency Donations. They talk about how to get started accepting cryptocurrency donations and what the future may hold for charities and cryptocurrency. So how much is Bitcoin worth? A year ago, one Bitcoin was valued around $10,000. It jumped to about $20,000 by December and $40,000 in January. By April, it was worth more than $60,000. But as of July, Bitcoin was worth about $33,000. So how do you get started? Let's find out with Jason Shim and Ann Connolly.
I think the place to start would be for most listeners, I think, starting simply, can you describe what cryptocurrency is without going, you know, in 60 seconds or less that people might understand?
Sure. So if you look at Bitcoin, it's a digital currency. So it's something you can transact with, but it isn't managed by any government like our normal money is. And so if you think about gold, gold isn't managed by any government. Anyone can use it, buy it, transact with it. But because it's heavy, it's really hard to do digital transactions with gold. It's not possible. And so Bitcoin is kind of like digital gold.
And as far as if I'm a fundraiser, what would my organization have to do to be able to accept Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency?
So there's a few approaches in doing this, but the simplest one is setting up an account with a third-party kind of transactor so that can accept it. So you would set up with a platform that would allow you to accept it, and what it would do is you would be able to receive cryptocurrency directly on your website by embedding a little widget, and you can choose to convert it to your local fiat currency immediately, or you can choose to keep it in cryptocurrency. And that would be the simplest way for charities to accept cryptocurrency. There's other ways of doing it as well, as, you know, setting up your own wallets and things that require a bit more tech savviness to do it. But for most organizations, setting up through a platform is the simplest way of getting started.
So it's sort of like handing it off to a payment processor in terms of letting an outside vendor handle everything in terms of the donation.
Yeah.
So that doesn't take much technical capacity for charity to be involved. The simplest point would be just to hire somebody, but they can also set up their, you call it a digital wallet. Are there organizations that have gotten that complex?
Yeah, most organizations that I've seen, especially in like the last kind of few years, have kind of gone the platform route because it is simple, and there have been more players in the market now that take care of, you know, things like the receipting and stuff like that. Versus, you know, if you do set up your own wallet, you know, there is an additional layer of administration, albeit, you know, it does afford you more control. But I think one of the big differences in the past few years is the ease for which organizations can get set up. It's gotten easier and easier.
And Bitcoin is just one type of cryptocurrency. How many different kinds are there? And is there is one better than the other? Or is it just that Bitcoin is the most well-known and most widely used?
There's more than 1,600 different crypto tokens out there, and that number is growing exponentially every day. And so all of the different tokens have different use cases where they might be better used, or they might just have different communities that believe in them in a different way. The same way as, you know, some people might want to use one particular national currency over another, or maybe one points program over another. There's different use cases for each one. Bitcoin is really the oldest and most pervasive of all the cryptocurrencies. So most people that own any cryptocurrency at all will have at least some Bitcoin. You can kind of think about it as like the reserve currency of the cryptocurrency world. So everybody's going to have at least a little bit.
What charities are out there doing it well? Are there charities that are raising millions of dollars now, or is no one really up to that level yet? I know American Cancer Society, for instance, and the Salvation Army have started in recent months accepting Bitcoin or crypto and getting some donations.
So there's a number of charities out there that have great programs. Save the Children has been involved for a long time. You've got Wikipedia, Electronic Frontier Foundation, Mount Sinai Hospital. So we're seeing a lot of major names that have programs, and we're also seeing the gifts that go with it. So there's, you know, there was one organization called the Pineapple Fund that gave away over $55 million in Bitcoin. We've seen, you know, multi-million dollar gifts towards COVID initiatives. We've seen, you know, events raising $200,000 for homeless charities coming out of Toronto. So there's really, you know, the stigma of having a Bitcoin donation program is really gone. There's really, you know, big brand name organizations are accepting cryptocurrency, and the ones that do accept it are seeing the gifts coming in a really big way. So it's an exciting thing to see that change happening, and to see those that are starting to accept Bitcoin to really get the results that they're looking for.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Pineapple Fund. I think that was the last time that crypto and Bitcoin really made a big splash in the headlines a few years ago. And the Pineapple Fund was a great example of that. It was huge donations to hundreds of organizations. Since then, we haven't heard a lot about it. Is that because of the volatility of crypto? And is that should that be a concern for charities? Just like stocks have volatility, Bitcoin and crypto are also a volatile channel.
Yeah, I think that in terms of what's most important for charities is, you know, how can you translate the value of the cryptocurrency so that charities can best fulfill their missions. And I think that, you know, even though there may be volatility, you know, within cryptocurrency, it really depends on how charities are treating their investment policies. So for example, you know, there's natural volatility that exists in the stock market, and many organizations will have investment policies that will mitigate that risk by requiring that the stocks are sold immediately for dollars. And so similarly, I think that for cryptocurrencies, you know, whatever the value is, you know, I think what matters is that at the point of donation, you know, the ability to convert that into, you know, a dollar amount, or, you know, the organization's willingness to keep it in cryptocurrency. But, you know, most organizations that are receiving stock donations aren't necessarily keeping them in securities form, but they're kind of putting it to immediate use as well.
And is that the case typically with crypto, in that they sell it right away and rather than hold on to it?
So a lot of charities do that. You know, it's a really good first step to getting into the crypto world. It's easy. It's simple. You can have a program up and running for, you know, at no cost within a week. But we're seeing a lot of the more sophisticated fundraising programs, like at universities, they're actually leveraging the volatility of cryptocurrencies by including them in their endowment funds. And so they're actually able to bring in a whole new revenue source by investing in cryptocurrencies, as opposed to just selling it right away.
So they hold it in their endowment, and that way, if there is volatility, they don't want to sell it yet, or they do if it's high. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And for listeners who've gotten this far into the episode, now's your chance to win a copy of Jason and Ann's book, Bitcoin and the Future of Fundraising. Tweet us at Nonprofit Times or at me, M. Harivna, or use the hashtag Fresh Research with a link to the episode, and you'll be eligible to win a copy of Bitcoin and the Future of Fundraising, a beginner's guide to cryptocurrency donations.
There's more about Bitcoin and the future of fundraising after this.
If you like what you're hearing, share it with friends and colleagues on social media. Use the hashtag FreshResearch or retweet the Nonprofit Times link, and you'll be eligible to win a book from the NPT Library. Another way for folks to find the show, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're a nonprofit executive director, communications person, fundraiser, or other senior leader, Chances are you're looking for ways to grow your expertise, keep on top of what's happening in the nonprofit world, and looking for inspiration. That's why you're listening to this podcast right now, I bet. I'm Sarah Durham, and I'm the host of the Smart Communications Podcast. Twice a month, we drop a short podcast, usually about 10 to 20 minutes long, on a topic that will help you become a smarter communicator. We've interviewed fundraising experts about why galas might be dead, executive directors about how they recharge, take sabbaticals, and use their values to lead, and done deep dives into subjects like how to do equitable and community-centric research, branding, campaigns, and more. Check out the Smart Communications Podcast in iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now back to our discussion with Ann Connolly and Jason Shim about their new book, Bitcoin and the Future of Fundraising, A Beginner's Guide to Cryptocurrency Donations.
So where do you see cryptocurrency in 5-10 years? Is it going to be as ubiquitous as online giving is these days?
I think that when I look at the evolution of the internet and, you know, when thinking back about the internet first, at least for me, I got exposed to it in the 90s, there were a few things that we could extrapolate from it. And, you know, from there, you know, it's that, trend wise, you know, things would get faster, more interconnected, things generally would get easier to do, but the specifics of it were kind of hard to identify in terms of, in the mid 90s, anticipating that, would have, as much social media as we have today. However, when looking out towards, cryptocurrency and blockchain, I think that there are some really interesting things that have been emerging that, may paint a picture of what things may look like 5 to 10 years from now. Things like, just the ability to have digital scarcity is not something that has been very easy to have before. The things like these non-fungible tokens or NFTs that have been recently emerging, this provides whole new ways for artists to monetize their work. So, the ability to create something and, make it scarce online, I think can open up some really fascinating ways, 5 to 10 years from now, that, people can create more digital art that is uniquely linked, to artists. I think that the ability to create your own currency or to become your own bank, I mean, that's already been established with cryptocurrency. And so 5 to 10 years from now, I could see many of the things that we have entire institutions built upon, could be abstracted away onto the blockchain itself. So, things like, insurance policies or things like, smart contracts, can take care of, agreements that, typically require a whole bunch of, organizations or people to structure, can potentially be carried out on the blockchain. And that really, every charity will accept Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies because, I think that when we look, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that even the onset of credit cards, there was a time when it still took some convincing to have organizations accept credit cards and, and then putting credit cards online was a whole other thing. I think that accepting cryptocurrency will just be, commonplace or some form of it in 5 to 10 years.
I like that comparison to credit cards and whether charities should accept credit cards online. That's a crazy idea 25 years ago. Is there a similar sort of apprehension around crypto because people don't understand it necessarily? When you read about, the dark web or Bitcoin thieves or things like that, that people they don't quite understand it. So they're a little nervous about it. And you also, Jason mentioned, the phrase blockchain, which we haven't even gotten into. Is that something that people should understand when they're talking about cryptocurrency? Do they have to really understand the idea even behind blockchain beyond cryptocurrency?
Well, I want to answer your first question there because sure. I remember back in the early days of the internet, my parents having conversations about how anyone would be able to look up the recipe for a bomb on the internet and just what was this going to do for society? And we should be stopping this. And this is very scary. And when we think about the internet today and all the value that that's brought to the world, we would never consider shutting the internet off because maybe there's a website with, you know, bomb instructions on it. And the same sort of stigma and fear has been linked to Bitcoin. You know, people worry, oh, is it going to be used for crime? Is it going to be used for people to buy drugs? And the reality is that's just not what Bitcoin is being used for. It's just an outdated stigma. And, you know, even when you think about the internet in the early days, people were worried about, you know, people creeping on other people. And now the majority of relationships are built on the internet. So the same sort of thing can apply with cryptocurrency, where we need to just create a comfort level with the idea that this is new, and sometimes new technology can be a little bit scary, but it can also bring about incredible change for the benefit of people all over the world. And so I think it's really critical that everyone in the nonprofit sector takes the time to sit down and really understand, you know, how can these currencies, cryptocurrencies, and, you know, even deeper, how can blockchain technology actually make the world a better place, not only for nonprofits, but for the beneficiaries and the communities that they serve.
Jason, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, no, I would echo those comments around, you know, just the evolution of the internet and, you know, what we have seen in terms of, you know, identifying, you know, there are technology problems and then there are, you know, other kind of, you know, considerations. And, you know, for the tech itself is, you know, needs to be kind of examined for what it can be used for. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt that often accompanies, you know, every single thing that comes out, you know, as Anne said. And, you know, we've seen, you know, the waves of every single new technology that comes out, that there's always that natural discomfort. And, you know, to be fair, you know, cryptocurrency is quite a stretch in terms of, you know, it represents a significant achievement in terms of a new way of creating, you know, the digital scarcity, digital currency concepts. And so, you know, naturally, you know, even in the past 10 years, you know, it's gone from, you know, something that was, you know, not well understood to, you know, you now have some fairly large, you know, financial institutions that are, as well as publicly traded companies that are putting, you know, their assets in reserve in cryptocurrency. So, you know, the signals are all there in terms of those who are able to kind of see past that initial fear and to hone in on what the benefits are. And I think that for the charitable sector, you know, that certainly, you know, what's helpful to keep in mind is at the end of the day, like, you know, there are people that, you know, may want to connect with a charity to give. And, you know, it's really being able to have that conversation with folks as well, that that is important.
Will cryptocurrency become less volatile as it becomes more mainstream and accepted? Or is it always going to be sort of like stocks in that way, that there'll be volatility?
So, you know, each cryptocurrency is completely different. Over time, you know, as adoption grows around Bitcoin and some of the more major ones, the volatility will go down. For organizations that want to completely avoid volatility, you can use something called a stable token or a stable coin, which is specifically designed not to be volatile at all. But again, as Jason mentioned at the beginning, you know, as a first step for any organization, it's really easy to just accept cryptocurrencies and sell them right away. And then the volatility is just an irrelevant part, just the same way it would be like if you accepted stocks and sold them. So, you know, the space is evolving. Different cryptos will rise and fall at different rates. But over time, I think we will see a little less volatility in some of the more major players like Bitcoin and Ether.
What's the downside of crypto? We talked about some of the perceived concerns and some of the misconceptions, but are there drawbacks to crypto for nonprofits and fundraising?
Not that I can think of. I mean, really, this is for charities out there and nonprofits, it's not really a question of should we do Bitcoin donations, should we accept cryptocurrencies? It's when should we accept cryptocurrencies? You know, really looking at it, the only concerns an organization might have, you know, you might hear from the board or from executive, are questions around, you know, what about the brand image if we're accepting this? But, you know, there's a number of great reputable charities already doing it. That's not really a concern anymore. So it's really just an incredible opportunity waiting to be, you know, taken advantage of. So it's really just about, you know, when does a charity get on board and how deeply do they get involved with cryptocurrencies? You know, do you just use it for donations or are you actually going the next step and using it to say, send money internationally or to pay your staff with it or, you know, taking advantage of the properties of the deeper blockchain technology to actually improve the way that you do operations as an organization. So I think, you know, most of the early concerns that boards and executives can have are easily dissuaded with, you know, the great opportunity that this is.
And I think that in terms of, you know, potential, you know, downsides, I would say it's analogous to, you know, asking the question, you know, what are the potential downsides of accepting, you know, credit cards or, you know, securities or in-kind donations, you know, along those lines in terms of, you know, it may be that, you know, it may be, you know, a little bit of extra administration to figure out the processes, you know, when you're initially getting set up, but really there's not necessarily anything that's particularly unique to it in that this is, you know, another asset that's out there that, you know, in terms of organizations figuring out how to translate that into value so that it can be of use to them.
I think we know, as fundraisers, folks know that who direct mail donors are. You know, they're going to be older, probably baby boomers, and even they're probably giving online now more than ever before. Is it safe to assume cryptocurrency donors are going to be much younger and probably millennials or even Gen Z?
Absolutely. So this is one of the huge benefits of, you know, starting a crypto program is that it gives you a great opportunity to target that younger demographic. And so when, you know, you think about your average donor, you know, in any traditional charity, it's, as you say, typically a little bit older. You know, I know the last organization I worked at, we had our average donor was Jane and she was 55 and she had two teenagers and was quite well off. And, you know, in the crypto world, the average crypto community member is, you know, a male, a European male between the ages of 24 to 35. They like technology, they like gaming. And, you know, so when you think about, like, if you went to a major donor event and you looked around the room in today's world, you know, who you might think has the capacity to give might be a couple and they're very well dressed up and they're a little more established. But in a crypto community world, perhaps the person who's most aligned with your charity and has the most capacity to donate is actually a 21-year-old wearing a unicorn t-shirt. So if you do set up a crypto program, it's really important to take the time to really get to know what makes this community tick, what they're passionate about, and where to find them, because you're not going to find them in the same places as you do with your traditional donor set.
Is it safe to assume too, you mentioned international, that probably is also a plus for charities who work internationally dealing with Bitcoin instead of various different currencies?
Absolutely. I mean, I know there's one organization called Code to Inspire, and they run a coding school for girls in Afghanistan. And if these girls wanted to get paid for their work, they would have to have, you know, a male relative open a bank account, and then someone in, say, Canada, the United States, or Europe would have to try to figure out how to get money from their bank into a bank in Afghanistan, which would be very difficult to do. And so Bitcoin enables operations like that to work totally seamlessly. Or if you look at the international aid market, like, I got excited about cryptocurrency because when I worked with Doctors Without Borders in Central African Republic, the whole country was essentially unbanked. And so I would carry knapsacks full of money through war zones so that we could pay our staff. And so Bitcoin provides organizations the opportunity to do that, you know, with a click of a mouse, which ensures, you know, maximum efficiency and also maximum safety for the people who are carrying that type of cash.
And you mentioned a typical cryptocurrency donor or audience tends to be European. Did I understand that right?
Yeah, it's, you know, cryptocurrencies are growing all over the world. The fastest growing communities are actually more so in Asia and Africa. But as it stands right now, you're mostly looking at North American, European males, mostly because that sort of aligns with the groups of cryptographers and technology, deep technologists. you know, the proportion of women in the space is growing as well, which is great. And we're seeing a lot of adoption, particularly in developing countries, places like Zimbabwe, Venezuela, Russia, places where there's currency controls or big issues with inflation. But yeah, in terms of like a good donor segment to go after for, say, major gifts, it would be reasonable to go after, you know, American or European males.
Yeah, one last thing that I didn't want to forget to ask. When I read about Bitcoin and I guess more about quote unquote Bitcoin mining, you hear a lot about the energy use involved in Bitcoin mining. Is that also prevalent in just cryptocurrency generally, or is that another aspect of it? Like I'm thinking of charities who might be, you know, environmentally focused. Would it be necessarily, you know, against their mission to accept crypto if it's, you know, heavy energy usage and that kind of thing?
I think that'll depend on the individual charity and, you know, again, their gift acceptance policies as well. I think if anything, it also, you know, highlights the importance of, you know, good energy policies too and renewable energy sources. So, you know, to be clear, you know, Bitcoin mining does take up a good you know, chunk of energy. However, you know, it really depends on, you know, if, let's say, you know, you're mining in an area that, you know, has sustainable renewable energy sources, then it's renewable and sustainable. So the thing to keep in mind too is that, you know, we're still in the early stages of cryptocurrency. And so, you know, some of the initial algorithms that were written, you know, were written on what's called a proof of work concept. And, you know, what's been emerging is, you know, proof of stake, which takes a very different approach for mining. And the numbers that are coming in are showing that it could be as much of as a 99% reduction in energy usage in order to mine. So as cryptocurrency continues to evolve, the energy required, you know, is not lost on the developers that are working on these projects as well. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, some of the major projects, you know, shifting towards that too. I think one thing to keep in mind too is that, you know, in terms of comparing the different energy consumptions, is that the traditional financial system uses significant amounts of energy as well, like just in different forms, you know, between the buildings that are required to, you know, construction costs to, you know, requiring, you know, the people to get to those buildings and such as well. So I do think that this does certainly make the case, though, for you know, better overall energy policy for renewables and sustainable electricity generation.
So it is something that maybe is a downside to Bitcoin, or something at least for charities to think about, if depending on their mission or their gift acceptance policies.
Mm-hmm.
What else, if I'm a charity or fundraiser looking at this, is there anything else that you would suggest or that I would need to know about before forging ahead with and going to my board with a proposal?
I think the first step for every fundraiser that's considering this is really just to go out and buy a dollar's worth of Bitcoin. You know, you don't need to invest your life savings, but you should invest a couple of hours in learning how it works, how you know, people would go through the process of buying $1 worth and storing it and what that looks like. And just becoming part of the community that they're looking to get donations from. It's an important part of the process. And I think it will really help fundraisers get a better sense of how this all works and what makes it so exciting.
Jason, any parting words?
Yeah, I think that when looking ahead to the future, you know, one big concept that, you know, I'm a big fan of is, you know, looking at how do we future-proof ourselves. And when thinking about, you know, emerging technologies and such, you know, and organizations kind of evaluating, you know, where do they fall within the innovation curve? Like, are you an early adopter? Are you, you know, do you tend to be, you know, a later adopter, a lagger? You know, it's helpful to keep in mind that, you know, this is something that, you know, over the course of the past 10 years, you know, we've seen that it's stuck around and it continues to grow. And so, you know, from a time investment standpoint, you know, it really doesn't take that much time to, you know, learn the basics of cryptocurrency. And so, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, our book that, you know, that just came out as well. So, you know, in terms of parting words, you know, pick up the book and it's available at bitcoinfundraising.com.
Terrific. Well, Jason and Ann, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Look forward to checking back in 10 years and see where we are with Bitcoin as it relates to other technologies.
That sounds good.
Thanks so much, Mark.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share the Fresh Research link on Twitter or Facebook to be eligible to win something from the NPT Library. You can also share on social media with the hashtag Fresh Research. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times, spotlighting research and trends in the philanthropic sector. Till next time, keep up with us at thenonprofittimes.com for all your nonprofit news.